SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the podcast entirely dedicated to The Hobbit, to the news from New Zealand about the two movies currently in production, the 3D movies, high resolution, 48 frames per second. But of course, it's not just about technology, it's all about the story. And that's what we're most excited about. Again, we're going to see how Peter Jackson will bring his interpretation of this this world-famous book to the silver screen. And of course, there will be ups, there will be downs, there will be pros and cons, there will be people super excited about it, and people hyper-critical about the changes. I guess this is just one of these stories. You cannot really please everyone, but just based on the success of The Lord of the Rings, it is definitely going to bring new excitement about Tolkien's works, and that in itself is always a good thing. Joining me today to talk about the latest news is Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Father. How are you, sir?
Good. I'm good. And
I should tell you good evening.
It's evening over here, yes. I'm a bit apprehensive for this episode because the last two shows we've been talking at length about the trailer. Some people were really amazed that we were able to talk 2 full hours about a trailer that is barely 2 minutes long. And as a result, we're very behind on all the regular news. And since we want to talk about the news and we want to bring you up to date so that you don't have to go and visit all these websites and blogs, not that we don't mind you doing that, but for those of you that just don't have the time to follow the news on all these blogs and websites, we do want to provide you with a recap of the weekly news, but I'm afraid that we have too much news, and a lot of it actually happened this past week. So what is your bet, Dave? Do you think we're going to get through our extensive list of items or not?
I think we can get through a lot of it. We may not get to some of the... I think we'll get through all of the really the important things, the sort of the first 6 or 7, mm-hmm. Some of the more minor ones toward the bottom of the list, and a few things that I've added to the list that aren't on there yet. We may not get through all those, but that's okay. Those aren't really as important.
Okay, I'm feeling a little bit more courageous now, or encouraged by your assessment. So let's start with the big news first.
Get down.
Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
No, nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So what have we heard? What have we seen on the internets? What's our first news of the day?
Well, okay. In my opinion, in the last month, apart from the release of the trailer, the two biggest or most interesting things to me, in my mind, would be there's an article in the LA Times on their blog, sort of little mini site, Hero Complex, which is sort of their, well, they call it For Your Inner Fanboy. It's herocomplex.latimes.com. People should definitely check it out. There's a lot, if you're sort of a geeky, nerdy person, there's a lot of news on there you'd enjoy. For example, there's an article on Star Wars The Old Republic. So
nice.
Anyway, they recently posted, I guess almost 2 weeks ago now, a photo of Martin Freeman as Bilbo with the sword Sting. And in the background, you can see webs and Mirkwood-looking stuff, so it's pretty clear that this is right around the time that he actually is dubbing the sword Sting and building its reputation.
So this must be from a different moment than what we've seen in the trailer, where there's this
exactly.
Green background and he's clearly in a forest. I'm looking at the picture right now, and it looks grim. And he's covered in cobwebs and almost looks as if he just killed something.
Yep, that's what a lot of people on the internet are. That's why a lot of people have said it's a spoiler, because it's not really a spoiler, but a lot of people have said it's kind of a spoilerish photo, because we've seen him in the sword in Mirkwood, and he's obviously been killing spiders.
Mm-hmm.
Which yeah, is... he's not looking too good. So this is Bilbo making his transition into warrior.
Could very well be. They have just this grim look on his face, like almost a sense of purpose all of a sudden that mm-hmm. he needs to survive now. And the situation, it's an intriguing picture. And it's a different sight from what we've seen so far, Bilbo Baggins being more the quintessential hobbit who doesn't like adventure, doesn't like battle, doesn't like danger. And here it's almost as if he's taking charge.
Yep, that's absolutely right. So attached to the photo is a nice little article that doesn't get into any really interesting details. There's no spoilers or new information. It's just sort of Peter Jackson commenting on the film and the experience of making it. They did talk a little bit. There's some comments from the screenwriter Philippa Boyens talking about trying to adapt this kid's story into a film that's more in the mode of the original Lord of the Rings film. So I'll go ahead and read her quote.
Sure.
"The story is very much a children's story, so deciding how to tell this was one of the first things we had to do," Boyens said in a phone interview right before Christmas. "Who is the audience? It is very distinctly different tonally to Lord of the Rings until the very end, and then you begin to see the world of Middle-earth opening up. But having said that, we felt that it will be the same audience who will come to see the films. And so then you start to worry because it's easy to repeat yourself. It is a quite similar journey. You're going from the Shire to a large, dangerous mountain." So sounds like they had a lot of anxiety over the adapting this story.
Interesting. Well, and it's probably going to be still a scary process for them because we don't know how the fans are going to react.
No.
Unless we've seen the whole thing. But I still I've got the feeling that this might be a little bit, you know, over the top anxiety. If they just stay in that same vein of what they did with The Lord of the Rings, how can they go wrong? Most people will love it. People will want to see it anyway. Mm-hmm. At least I would. All right. Always nice to see new pictures. What's the second story of the day?
So the other one that I think that ignited a firestorm is actually from 3 weeks ago. But so Benedict Cumberbatch has been in the news a lot. I'm sure you know him. You're probably very excited because not only is he in The Hobbit, he's doing the voice of Smaug and whatever, I don't know if it's voice or what, but he'll be playing the Necromancer as well. But mm-hmm. he's also Sherlock Holmes in the BBC's modern update of the Sherlock Holmes stories called Sherlock. And he was just recently announced to be playing the villain in the upcoming Star Trek sequel. So
yes.
That guy is on fire. So he's been all over the news. And he did an interview with Empire on the Sherlock set a little while ago. And of course, whenever they interview these people, they always bring up Hobbit. And he has a little quote in an answer to their question that ignited a firestorm on the internet. He says, "I'm playing Smaug through motion capture and voicing the Necromancer, which is a character in the Five Legions War or something which I'm meant to understand. He's not actually in the original Hobbit. It's something Peter Jackson's taken from Lord of the Rings that he wants to put in there." So I'm sure you can see why this would immediately set off the blogosphere and the Twitter sphere and the comments and discussions on places like the OneRing.net.
Well, he's a bit confused about terminology. I think
yes. Well, there's that first one. It's like, oh God, he didn't even get the name of the battle right.
Well,
so of course he's talking about the Battle of Five Armies.
And
but,
he's a dragon, so what does he know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But he is implying with what he's saying here, as confused as it is, that the Necromancer will be involved at, possibly present at, the Battle of Five Armies.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, it would be a significant change to the story to have the Necromancer.
Yes.
We, of course, know, being the super fans that we are, that the Necromancer is, in fact, Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
And we already knew that he was going to be in the films and that there was going to be this sort of parallel story of involving Gandalf and the White Council battling with the Necromancer.
Yes.
Whose fortress is in Dol Guldur in the Mirkwood. So the way the story goes in the books is that this is happening parallel to The Hobbit, and it doesn't ever enter the story of The Hobbit. But the White Council drives him out of Dol Guldur, and he flees to Mordor and then sets up shop there and says, yep, I'm actually Sauron. Hey, guys. In the implication here from Benedict Cumberbatch is that in the films, he's going to make a detour to the Battle of Five Armies and maybe lead the Goblin army into that and be part of that climactic battle. And of course, fans being fans, they, you know, immediately flipped out and said, oh, they're changing the story, all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of rampant speculation. Of course, people also are wondering if maybe he's just confused. He didn't get the name
Could
of the
be.
Battle corrected.
Because, of course, the Battle of Five Armies is part of the story, of the final part of the Hobbit story. But we never know exactly. I mean, we see conflicting interests there, and then Gandalf is, I think, the guy who actually appeases the whole situation, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's very interesting. I was just listening to the Tolkien professor's Hobbit lectures last week, and he points out that, you know, that in fact the arrival of the Goblin army ends up averting a much worse tragedy, which was the elves, men of Lake Town, and the dwarves of Lonely Mountain and the Iron Hills coming to blows and fighting amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. But the Goblin army shows up, and as the narrator says, you know, well, whatever disagreements that people might have, those immediately go out the window because everybody hates the goblins.
Yeah.
And so the goblins show up, and of course everyone's in danger, but it averts what would have been a worse tragedy, which is these armies battling themselves. So that Goblin army is actually in the book. It's led – I don't think this is mentioned in The Hobbit. It's mentioned in sort of the apocryphal materials. Mm-hmm. It's led by a goblin named Bolg, who's son of one Azog, whom we've talked about before. The implication here, the potential change that's suggested by Cumberbatch's answer is that this army may actually maybe be led by the Necromancer instead. So –
I mean, I understand that it's kind of non-canon stuff, but it's not out of character for Sauron to be involved in some way, even if it's just, you know, like kind of hidden in the background.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this. I would be satisfied with that. I think it'll probably tie the movie together better if these stories aren't completely separate. There's sort of in the appendix of the Return of the King, where Gandalf tells them about sort of the hobbits how this Bilbo's adventure fits into the larger sort of War of the Rings. He sort of hints at this potential connection between Smaug and Sauron, that maybe they weren't working together explicitly at that point, but that certainly if Smaug hadn't been defeated, he almost certainly would have ended up falling under the influence of Sauron, and he would have been used to great devastation. So I'm wondering if maybe they'll play that up a bit more, and they'll hint at this connection between the Necromancer and Smaug. And the goblins of the north. And so I'd be satisfied with that. I think I'll be upset if Sauron comes riding in on a wolf at the end of the army
that
and is fighting individually.
That would be a mistake. But I don't think that it's going to be like that. I can imagine that if you want to imply that he is actually – and also another narrative reason to do this would be to – start building up the threat of the Necromancer. I mean, you might have seen him before, but now he becomes actually a threat to the dwarves, to the hobbits, to the people. And so it actually would make a nice transition to his later power in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It doesn't make sense that towards the end of the story, all of a sudden this the guy who we know is going to be the most dangerous adversary in the Lord of the Rings just disappears and just, you know, goes away. I mean,
runs off. Yes. It's interesting. They're walking a fine line by introducing this storyline in. On the one hand, if they do, like you said, if the last we see of him is that he flees the White Council and that storyline just ends there, I think people are going to say, what was the point of all that? It has nothing to do with the main story. The flip side is if they play him up too much, it will overshadow the main story of The Hobbit, which is Bilbo's quest. And
couldn't they just go the way of what they did with Saruman? Just that he's behind it, but he's more kind of a general who's in his quarters.
Yep.
Kind of influencing the orcs, or, you know, just riling them up, and we never really get to see him in the battle itself.
Yeah, that's my suspicion.
That's how I would do it.
I could see that, and I'd be satisfied with that.
Yeah,
I think
it would not really change the story, or not even the battle, but
yep.
it would just give a little bit more depth, perhaps, mm-hmm. to the whole, you know, the what caused this five armies battle. It would also introduce his character more, or in reinforce this idea that, you know, evil is divisive, and it actually, you know, it's not just a conflict of interest. It's not just an economic battle there, but there's real evil involved. There
is real malice behind it.
Yeah, there's malice behind it. I think story-wise, that would be at least consistent with the way that we see evil at work in overall in the world of Tolkien.
I completely agree. I think that would work quite well. And in fact, I think that is even the kind of change that had Tolkien found sufficient time to revise The Hobbit the way he wanted to.
He might
that's the
have
kind of change
that.
He might
yes.
have made.
Actually, it would be interesting to go back to the guy to The Hobbit, or I've got these books here that also talk about
the history
about
of The Hobbit.
The history of The Hobbit, and it talks about all sorts of plans that he had, but he never really, you know, he did revise The Hobbit several times, and and that's how we kind of ended up with the story that we currently have. But he had actually more revolutionary ideas as well. This might be one of them. This I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if they actually went and made sure that there were at least like an implicit benediction of Tolkien over this new idea.
Some thread.
But you know, that might be an interesting quest for our avid Tolkien fans to just go and look for indications that this might actually have been part of Tolkien's own ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess that if it's not in a book, then ultimately it's not canon. I mean, it's like with George Lucas. As long as, you know, he's got lots of crazy ideas, but as long as it's not in the movies, we're not going to care. Unless he just remakes the movies and... It's like the whole emperor idea that only came about in The Empire Strikes Back and in A New Hope. There was no trace of the emperor. Everybody thought that Darth Vader was the ultimate evil, and you know, perhaps initially, the whole idea of the emperor wasn't even part of the plan, and it was just brought in later on. Who knows?
Yep.
Anyway. It's going to be interesting. So it's going to be interesting. But again,
we'll be talking about this more throughout the year.
Yeah, and we're talking about one quote from Benedict Cumberbatch, who might not be as knowledgeable about The Hobbit as many of others are. So who knows? It might all be just false alarm. And we go,
yep.
We're in red alert status, and there is not even a trace of the Borg to just counterbalance my Star Wars references.
That's awful.
Yes. What else was in the news?
So the next story I want to skip down to is another one from LA Times, the Hero Complex page from January 23rd, so just a few days ago. A nice interview with Andy Serkis, which is – it's a great interview. This guy is just a gold mine. He's doing interviews all the time, and he gives such wonderful interviews too. But they talk to him – it's a lot about motion capture and digital acting on some of the awards that he's received and his and the buzz around the possibility that he'll be nominated for an Oscar. But he does talk about The Hobbit, and he speaks specifically about on returning to play Gollum and just what a wonderful experience that's been for him. He specifically says that Gollum's never really gone too far away from me because he's indelibly kind of printed into my DNA now, I think.
Wow.
It's a little disturbing.
Yeah, I'm not sure that everyone would be glad about that.
Apparently, Andy Serkis, he's had the ring. He possessed the ring too long. It left its imprint on him.
He's wearing a ring. I assume it's just a wedding ring in most of the photos on that website. It could be the One Ring.
Yep.
Interesting. And I'm fascinated by the photos also of the motion capture, and there's this camera in front of his face. Now, I don't know if I think that most of the photos here in this article are from him playing Caesar in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they use exactly the same equipment for his Gollum performance. But he's got the green dots on his face, and there's this little camera in front of him. I know that he said in one of these interviews that they actually do capture all his facial movements as well, which wasn't the case for his original portrayal of Gollum. And so it would even be more his performance.
Yep. Yep.
But
it's going to be I have a feeling his performance is going to be even better in this film, even though it's going to be such a sort of a small role in the thing. Because my understanding is that is the major difference between the state of the art of the technology now versus 10 years ago. The 10 years ago, he did the voice and a lot of the movement, but the sort of micro expressions and the facial expressions and whatnot were animated.
Yes.
But now, like his performance in Caesar, it's the digital capture technology is almost like makeup. He really is doing the whole performance, and they're just sort of reskinning him, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Although you never know exactly how much tweaking is going to be involved. What I'm a bit worried about is that the and this is always the problem with prequels and evolving CGI, is that actually the old Gollum will look better than the new one, than the more recent one, the Lord of the Rings one. But I don't know. Perhaps not. Perhaps I'm just worried for nothing, because it will still look like him. It will still be basically mainly the same model that they will use.
That's true. Did you feel the same way about computer animated Yoda versus puppet
yes.
Yoda?
Oh, there was definitely a difference between at least the first attempt to do a computer generated Yoda. Later on, they kind of revised him, and he became more puppet-like, and that actually worked better. But I still cringe when I see him in the prequels, and he walks around, and it's so not a puppet. And it just, I don't know. It's good, but it's very different, and mm-hmm. the continuity is lost there.
I agree. Well, I have faith in Peter Jackson and Andy Serkis. I think they'll do a great job with him. And your consolation is that I don't think he's going to be in too many scenes.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to miss Gollum in the Hobbit. I think he's an integral part of the story, and you need him to again just tie this story to the Lord of the Rings. And I want to see the ring, and I want to see a little bit of the ominous power of the ring, even though it's not that explicit in the original Hobbit book. But
I wondered for a long time if he would if they would have Gollum. They would sort of expand his role, maybe have him follow Bilbo out of the mountains. But toward the bottom of this interview, he mentions that what an interesting experience shooting this has been, because he went down to New Zealand initially to shoot Gollum, and apparently that took 2 weeks, and then he was done.
Yes.
And then he stayed for the year to direct the second unit.
Right.
So
right.
That doesn't sound like he's going to be in too many scenes.
No, and they, if I recall, well, from the first production video, it's actually the whole cave scene, the meeting Bilbo, was the first mm-hmm. thing they did, the first thing they shot, probably also to free him up for second unit direction. Because you don't want to be doing. Although I imagine that he's going to be doing some reshoots, and they're going to, you know, perhaps need him.
Yeah, I bet you're right. Over the next year, especially after they finish the principal photography, so maybe late this year or 2013, he'll do some reshoots or something.
I wouldn't mind them redoing some of the scenes from the Lord of the Rings, though. I mean, we still have the different Bilbo.
Do you think they'll do a Peter Jackson? Or a Peter Jackson? Do you think they'll pull a George Lucas? They're going to start reshooting The Lord of the Rings at the end of this too? Well, we could fiddle with this scene. And
I'm not supposed to say this, but actually I wouldn't mind, because some of the special effects are really aged now, and they don't work that much that well nowadays. And there are a few things that I want them to reshoot. I would like to have the new Bilbo in the scene where they first see, you know, where we get the flashback mm-hmm. of the story of the ring. And I would like to see a complete reshoot of the transformation from, you know, Gollum. Well, it's the creature that he used to be, Smeagol, into Gollum, because that didn't work at all.
It was worst scene.
Horrible, horrible, horrible.
It's just creepy.
Especially the morph from the CGI to the, or from the actor actually into the CGI Gollum, that didn't work at all. And I guess they could do better nowadays. They could probably just have a completely CGI generated Schmeagol that would still look a bit more like Andy Serkis, but this was just not working. It was just unrealistic. I don't know.
I vote they just remove that. Just leave it to our imagination.
Yeah, or do it in a more poetic way with, I don't know, just paintings or something like that. I thought it was a mistake to do to show us that.
So what did you think? Did you read the little paragraph about undoing Gollum's voice? What did you think about the Gollum juice?
No, I've not read that. Sorry.
Oh, so he says, I'll read it to you. I think my vocal cords are so thrashed that I don't really feel anything anymore.
Oh,
during Lord of the Rings, I used to have drink tons of what we call Gollum juice,
was
lemon, honey, and ginger. And I actually went, when I went back to do The Hobbit this time to reprise the role, I did probably kind of more romantically and sort of nostalgically get people to whip up a few bowls of Gollum juice, which I used to drink. But it doesn't really hurt, to be honest, anymore.
Wow. So his vocal cords are just messed
up
now.
He's just destroyed his vocal cords, so it's like natural.
Well, you can bet. You know, if you are Andy Serkis and you're at any meeting with your family or friends, they're all going to ask you to do Gollum, right?
Yes.
So
he's just been talking like that for the last 10 years.
I bet you there are a lot of fans that actually have the same, you know, distressed vocal cords now as well, because they're imitating Gollum way too much. Oh, man.
Yep.
All right. What about this Sundance interview?
So that's an interesting one. Both Peter Jackson and Elijah Wood were at the Sundance Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So people, of course, they were there each promoting different films. But, of course, everyone wants to talk about The Hobbit, which I expect is probably very frustrating for Peter Jackson, because he's trying to promote this documentary film West of Memphis about the West Memphis Three, who are, you know, sort of wrongfully imprisoned and all that. And people are like, wow, this is, you know, really wonderful that you've done this social justice. So about The Hobbit. But it sounds like he tolerated those questions some, in particular, he and Elijah Wood talked a lot about how going back to the film The Hobbit was a lot like a family reunion. There's more from Elijah Wood in this article than from Peter Jackson. Elijah says that his part was really small, and he joked that when he finished shooting his scenes, he didn't want to leave. Apparently he tried to get Andy Serkis to let him just join the second unit crew.
Wow.
I could love to see Elijah Wood running around with a camera.
Yeah, well, I imagine that it's so nostalgic, and this has had such an impact on his life that I wouldn't want to leave either. I mean, I would just buy one of these Hobbit holes and stay in Matamata for the rest of my life.
Yep. So anyway, Peter Jackson's quote, it says, I'm enjoying it much more than I ever thought I would, and it literally does feel like a family reunion, which is a nice way to go to work each day.
That's great. That's great, because I think that for The Lord of the Rings, it was exhausting, and you could tell that he was suffering sometimes filming this. Mm-hmm. And now he's much more experienced, probably also. It helps that he has a much bigger budget, and so he's got much more help. So
yeah,
he can focus on
true.
He can focus on directing and doing the fun stuff, and he'll have his minions for all the stuff that he used to do by himself.
Carrying the set pieces around. And
yeah, and then also I remember that with Lord of the Rings, they were constantly rewriting at the same time as they were shooting. And so there was this additional pressure of constantly updating the story, whereas with The Hobbit, they've had so much time preparing the script. I mean, the genesis of these two movies has been way longer than he had with Lord of the Rings. So that, too, will probably – I mean, I can imagine that they will still do small rewrites, and we'll talk with the actors and, you know, see how they can make this even better. But it's probably much less of a stressful thing than with Lord of the Rings, where they actually were rewriting during the night and then, you know, just handed over the photocopies minutes before shooting. Wasn't it in one of the director commentaries that one of the actors actually said that he was reading his lines from the script that was actually on the floor while he was filming the scene, because he didn't have time to record to rehearse it?
I think that there were scenes like that where they were just totally out of time. They had to start shooting, and so they just put the papers in front of the actors, which is amazing because you don't notice that at all. You just think that the guy is – I don't remember exactly who it was, but you think that the person is just in a reflective mood, looking at the floor, you know, kind of pensive, and it's just reading his lines from the paper.
Hopefully they're doing a lot less of that this time around. I imagine that's the case.
But I'm glad for Peter Jackson because it's, you know, he didn't want to direct these movies at first. And probably thinking back of all, you know, the painful experience it was at times during Lord of the Rings. And now he's really enjoying it. So that's good. Happy people make good stuff, make beautiful movies in general.
Yep. At the bottom of that other article, there is a quote for him where he does say that this has been, let's see, where is it? Where are you, quote? He says, "This is the most enjoyable filmmaking experience of my career by far," which is interesting since I came into it slightly reluctantly.
Hmm.
It's all unexpected.
Nice.
So it's an unexpected party, an unexpected journey, and an unexpectedly wonderful filmmaking experience for Peter Jackson.
Wonderful. And I'm sure that he's honest. He's not just saying that because he wants a good, a positive vibe around his movie.
I believe from
the production videos, they show a very content, hobbit-like Peter Jackson, who is just really liking what he does.
Yep.
And that's wonderful.
So there's a more extensive interview of Elijah Wood on Collider.com from about 4 days ago, January 22nd. He's on a press tour for a variety of projects, but there's some interesting tidbits in there. A lot of the same stuff. He's talking about what it's like to return to film in New Zealand. He talks about how he's definitely talking about a lot of the upgrades. On the one hand, it's the same space. So he said in the other interview, he mentioned that going back to New Zealand and going back, revisiting like the Shire set, it's like nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
And he said there's a lot of the same crew members and creative heads and stuff. So it's getting the gang back together. But then again, at the same time, the production is much larger in scale. The technology is improved. He's really struck by how much the filming in digital and in 3D has really changed the way that they make films. He said that it used to be, I think, you know, 10 years ago when they were first filming this, they did have the little screens up so you could kind of see what was being shot. But he said it was just very sort of a remnant, you know, just to give you a basic feel.
Yeah.
But he says now, especially with the 3D screens up, you're seeing what's 90% going to go on to the screen with minimal changes. So it's really extremely useful as an actor to be able to actually to know right away, to get sort of instant feedback about whether that scene just worked or not, whether your performance is working. And so it sounds like the advances in the digital filming and the being able to, you know, having these screens available to see what things look like, especially the 3D screens, are really transforming the way that these guys do their jobs.
I was wondering if Lord of the Rings was filmed digitally, or was it filmed with just, you know, old-fashioned film?
I can't remember.
Like chemical film.
That's a good question.
Because
this was
past the Star Wars prequels, and Star Wars prequels were done in HD. So just using 1080p or probably even 1080i cameras, because it was just brand new technology. And nowadays that would be considered to be extremely low resolution because they've got 4K cameras and even 8K, if I'm not mistaken. That's just the amount of pixels. But I'm not sure about LOTRO if that was filmed with – because I can imagine if it was filmed digitally, they could probably watch it back. But if it was done just with old-fashioned film, then of course that had to be developed, and you can only have reels of 10 minutes per day or per scene.
Yeah, I'm digging into it. I can't remember, and I can't find a quick answer. My feeling is that it was filmed digitally, or parts of it were, but I think Elijah was, you know, one of the things he was getting at is that even 5-6 years ago, even digital productions that he was on, you still didn't have this way to watch what was just filmed on a high resolution screen immediately.
Yeah.
Because you didn't, one, you probably didn't have the portable high res displays, the sort of cheap, easy to carry around, move around poor digital displays. And also just there's the transfer of the, you know, the because these are high resolution digital video files, they're enormous, and it's, and they probably didn't have a way to efficiently transfer it someplace else to be able to watch it. And so even when they had digital filming, you know, as much as it, just as little as like 5-6 years ago, they still didn't have this extremely useful way to watch it. So and certainly, yeah, before digital filming, you had basically no way to watch it.
Yes. Yeah,
so, I'm looking but he at. He says now, or he says until you actually saw the dailies, you couldn't see what the image looks like. Now, because The Hobbit is being shot digitally, we're seeing a full HD image in 3D, pretty much exactly as it's going to go look when it's thrown up on the big screen. That's amazing, and it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it.
Yes.
They can do a lot of the tweaking on the day, which is really cool.
I think that I'm looking at the IMDb technical specifications for The Lord of the Rings, for the Fellowship of the Ring. And mm-hmm. this page seems to suggest that this was still filmed on regular negative 35 millimeter Kodak Vision film. It used a digital intermediate, so it was scanned for some scenes in 2K, which is half the resolution that they use nowadays. And that was only used for probably for some digitally enhanced scenes. So, but most of it was just filmed on regular film, which means that they probably only had dailies on or on the set. They would probably just videotape some stuff with, I don't know what process. And then basically you could probably see it on small TV monitors.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you get. So yeah,
yep.
And it's very hard to judge your own performance and even the composition of scenes and the color grading and everything on tiny little TV monitors. So yes.
Yep, I think you're right. I think that's correct. It wasn't filmed digitally. I think there were places where it was projected digitally, but that's not necessarily the same as actually filming it digitally.
No, no,
so
no.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah, so things have really come a long way. It's amazing to think, he points this out, he turned 19 in Hobbiton, and now he's back, and he's 30. It's 11 years later.
It's still extremely young. I mean, it's like, what are you talking about? You're just 30. And he still looks surprisingly similar to what he looked in the movies.
Yes, he definitely has one of those baby faces.
Yes.
They don't even have to do any digital touch-ups.
He says that his role is very small in this, and he actually thinks that's an advantage. So he can still look at the entire movie or movies as a fan, and he can be a little bit more objective than when he was talking about The Lord of the Rings. So he's involved in, I guess, in just this really short role at the beginning of the story, and that's it. But he's just as excited and pumped about the trailer as we were, and he's probably, you know, going to be just as much surprised with the end result as we will be. So that's very cool to have one of the actors involved in a movie kind of being on our side as well. He's just as much a fan as we are. Just has a little bit more, you know, on-set experience and has, you know, some context that we would love to have, but we don't have. Oh, man. Do we know if any of the other actors, well, of course, we've got Orlando Bloom, and we haven't heard much about his role. He doesn't seem to do any interviews, but I'm wondering if we've seen any of the... of the original Fellowship actors on the set. We know that the person who played Gimli was online. I'm looking over. I've lost my connection with Dave, so I'm trying to do two things at once. But we know that the actor who played Gimli was on the set. We know that Frodo was on the set. I don't know actually about the rest of the actors. I have not heard about any of the elves or minor characters, whether they visited or not. Let's see, Dave, can you hear me? I have a connection with Dave, but for some reason he's not. It's not an audio connection, so. It's we're having some problems here with the internet. Let's see. Well, you know, let me take a short break here, and then we'll continue our show. And in the meantime, we'll try to fix the problems.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Bluehost, which is a great hosting service. What I like about it, if you want to start your own Hobbit blog or you want to blog about Tolkien but you don't know how to set up a blog, Bluehost does it for you. It's just a one-click installation, and it comes with a .com, a real professional .com domain name. And the price is unbeatable. It's just $6.95 per month. Great service, unlimited bandwidth, etc. So it's you never get into trouble when your blog all of a sudden gets linked to by Peter Jackson himself. So go check it out if you want to set up a website, or even if you want to move your current existing website or blog to Bluehost. Go to thehobbit.sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner to sign up. And, you know, for that price, you can just try it out and see if you like it. And if you don't like it, it's easy to export all your data and start elsewhere as well. But I'm using it myself, can highly recommend it. And this show is also sponsored by you, the listener. We've got a lot of people that support us with a one-time gift or a monthly recurring subscription or donation. If you want to become a friend of SQPN, the network that produces The Secrets of Middle-Earth, The Secrets of the Hobbit, and many other shows, just go to sqpn.com or to thehobbit.sqpn.com, and you'll find all the information that you need to become one of our founding members, or how do you say that, the like recurring subscribers that make it possible for us to continue all our productions. Let's see if Dave is back. Dave, can you hear me?
I am here.
Perfect. All right.
That was fun.
I think there was a slight hiccup in my internet connection because all of a sudden I seem to be offline. But
yep. And then my for some reason my. Like, Skype occasionally does this weird thing for me where if a call gets interrupted or something, suddenly my headset stops responding, and
oh,
I have
really?
To unplug it and plug it back in for the driver to reboot or something.
Okay, well, yeah, it just goes to show that we're not Peter Jackson, so we don't have a big technical crew that will solve all these problems. But no worries,
but we're back.
We're back. So let's continue with our overview of this. Well, the past few weeks of news.
So fortunately, we only have a couple more what I would consider big stories. And I think we can get through them pretty quickly and have time to do some of the fun small stories.
Perfect.
The next one's an interview with Evangeline Lilly from yesterday. It's with Inside. Let's see. It's on Entertainment Weekly. And anyway, they're just talking to her about sort of her career. And I think what she's doing is promoting the release of her most recent film, Real Steel, on Blu-ray. But of course, they asked her about The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
and especially they wanted to, you know, because her character is a little controversial because it's made up. But the interesting thing is she gives an answer that gives us a hint as to where the films are going to be split.
Ooh.
Which, of course, is a big question.
Interesting.
They ask her about her character, and she mentions that her character is a warrior, head of the Elven Guard. So that gives us a clue as to what her role might be. Yada, yada, yada. You know, saying like, oh, she's really, you know, kicks butt and stuff. Great. But she says that she's not in the first film very much. She comes into the first film near the end and has a very small part to play. Her role in the second film is much more involved. So the indication there would be that they probably are going to split the film right around the time the dwarves are captured by
yes.
the elves.
So in Mirkwood.
Mm-hmm. And the suggestion being that if she's part of the Elven Guard, maybe either the guys, the elves that capture them, or perhaps the jailers, that means that's why we would see her right at the end of the first film. They
yes.
capture the dwarves,
yeah.
they get thrown in prison, there she is shutting the door on them, black screen. You know, to be continued a year from now.
Interesting. So it would mean that the movie would end with a cliffhanger. The dwarves and Bilbo being captured and all seems to be lost. And then we'll see the end of that in the beginning of, at the start of the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And does she give any other things away about her character? And so she's going to fight. She knows how to wield a weapon.
Yep, she's going to get some action scenes. I think a lot of people are speculating that she'll be involved in the Battle of Five Armies, but she doesn't know yet, or at least didn't confirm it. But she did say she's going back for 5 more months of filming.
That's
so
a lot.
That would indicate a significant role.
That must be more than just Mirkwood. Because that she has to be involved somehow in a bigger story arc then.
Yep, that would seem to indicate battle to me.
But the Battle of Five Armies or something else?
Oh, that is a good point. We still don't know what they're going to do in terms of the White Council's conflict with the Necromancer and whether that will be a battle. And it could be, if that's a battle, maybe she'll be involved in that.
Well, and then Orlando Bloom might be involved in that as well.
Yes.
We still don't know exactly where he is brought into the story, but it's clear that it's not going to be in the same way as they did with Frodo, where Frodo is clearly part of the framework. I think that Orlando Bloom is going to be part of the time frame that The Hobbit takes place in. And you know, I think that Orlando Bloom himself who said, you know, I think it was Peter Jackson who said he still looks exactly the same. And of course, as an elf, he needs to be kind of timeless. He doesn't need to be, you know, he surely shouldn't look any older than he looks in Lord of the Rings, or younger, because elves are just, 29 years old for most of their lives?
Yes.
I read a great article, actually, in the Dummies Guide to Middle Earth. That really exists, The Dummies Guide to Middle Earth. There's this whole chapter about immortality, and the author of the book has some comments on, you know, people think that being an elf and being immortal is getting the better deal compared to, you know, hobbits and humans, but actually it's not. Imagine if you were 29 years old for most of your life, and you got to wonder most of your life what you're going to do with the rest of your life, and it will never materialize because you're always 29 years old. It's not as fun as you think it is. It's a great little, you know, piece of philosophical reflection on mortality and immortality. But anyway, yeah. So and who knows? We might see Evangeline Lilly's character and Orlando's character being, you know, somehow part of the same story, or perhaps they are teaming up, or I don't know. There might be even a dramatic ending. There's still this possibility, of course, that elves die, even though they don't really die as humans would die. But I can imagine that since we don't know anything about what's her name now, Tauriel, in The Lord of the Rings, we've not heard of her.
Maybe they'll kill her off.
Yeah. Perhaps she might have a story arc where she sacrifices herself. I don't know. Perhaps to save Orlando Bloom.
That's right. People would love that.
I don't know. Just speculating here, not based on any knowledge. Let's get back to the facts.
We love starting rumors.
Yes.
Well, that's really all. That's about what's in there. The last big story that I think you'll enjoy is an article on the Washington Post about shooting The Hobbit at 48 frames a second.
Oh, good.
So I think we've talked about this before a little bit. I think we already knew that he was doing this, but I guess he talked about it a little bit more at in his interviews over the last month and at Sundance. So he specifically says, you shoot at 48, project at 48, and you get an illusion of life that's remarkable. You don't realize just how strobing and how flickery 24 frames is, Jackson said at the Sundance Film Festival. You look at something at 48 frames and it looks gorgeous. It looks like real life. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be perhaps a bit unsettling at first because we're not used to seeing movies with that speed. But I think it has tremendous advantages over 24 frames. 24 frames. The problem is if you pan around, everything gets blurred. And so if you see camera movements in 24 frames are always kind of slow. And if the camera moves too fast, like in fight scenes, you become disoriented. And in some movies, even push this further. Like, remember Gladiator? I don't know if you saw that in the cinema. They use this technique of showing fight scenes with an even slower frame rate. So it would become almost stroboscopic, or like really strange, weird, like 12 frames per second instead of 24. And it was just disorienting, and it just didn't work. And then they copied that with a lot of other movies. I'm pretty sure that if once we've seen The Hobbit at 48 frames, we're going to look back at those movies and like, what were they thinking? 24 frames per second was bad enough, and let alone if you kind of lower the frame rate, you get just basically a slideshow. Our brains are not, you know, adapted for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Apparently, at a CinemaCon convention for theater owners in Las Vegas last March, James Cameron, the guy who did Titanic and Avatar, did a demo where he showed footage shot at 24, 48, and 60 frames a second, like the same scene.
Okay.
And the person writing the article says the faster speeds noticeably reduced or eliminated blurriness in action sequences, or when the camera panned and dollied down the length of a crowded banquet table. So.
Well, we're all used to 60 frames per second because that's kind of the frequency of most home videos. That's why it looks so different from movie, because it's a different frame rate. Yep. It's a bit too sharp and too fluid. And a lot of cameras nowadays have the ability to film in 24 frames per second just to enable you to get a more filmic look. But that's going to be outdated soon. If everybody switches in the industry to 48 frames per second, then that won't be necessary anymore. We'll get used to it.
I think we'll probably find it's not going to be too bad of a adaptation for us. I think it's going to look beautiful.
It all depends, of course, on the cinematography in general. I mean, it won't look like a home video, even though it might use the same kind of not exactly, but it will approach the frames per second of regular video, but the dolly shots and just the movements of the camera and the way it's cut and the way it's edited will still convey that filmic impression, I think. I'm going to be excited. I'm definitely going to plan on seeing this in a theater that will allow me to see this in HD in, 48 frames per second and in proper 3D, because there are also a lot of differences in 3D projection. And recently I saw a few movies in 3D. I think I mentioned this before in my local theater here in Amersfoort. And I was not happy with it. Turns out that they have a different projection technique from, let's say, another movie theater that I often go to in Amsterdam. And you can really tell the difference. You know, the one is the local one is headache inducing. It doesn't work and it looks fake. And whereas I saw Avatar in Amsterdam and it looked fabulous. It's not just the 3D. It's also the quality of the projection. Not to mention, what the quality of the glasses you get. Sometimes you get these secondhand glasses and they're all smudgy and or the plastic is wobbly. I hate that.
Oh yeah, I agree.
I was like, on how many noses has this pair of glasses been? And what kind of noses? I don't want to know.
Yeah, they do disposable, recyclable ones at most of the theaters I go to here. So you get glasses that are in a little piece of plastic, and then you toss them in what looks like a trash can on your way out.
They've been washed and disinfected, hopefully.
Theoretically.
Theoretically. Yes. All right. Well, interesting.
So there's one more piece of film news that we could do really quick,
sure.
which is fun because it's a location thing, which we always enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
But there was an article in the Daily Post from I'm reading the URL to figure out where it is. It's someplace in New Zealand, the Rotorua Daily Post from yesterday. But the title of it is Taupo's Rapid Allure to Hobbits, to Hobbit. Basically, they're filming in the Aratiatia Rapids near Taupo using the spill gates from a dam to create, to get the water. So apparently they were filming every time the dam was released, some water was released. They would go and film a scene where they would dump 20 to 25 barrels in the rapids and film that.
Wow.
Yes. They said no actors were inside the barrels at the time this was filmed.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Not even stunt actors. That's well, it's obvious you don't need that. Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. I think that brings us to the end of this episode. We still have a lot of kind of smaller news and Fen-related news.
We can do it next week.
We'll keep that. We'll save that for next week.
One I really want to do at some point that we can do next week is play the remixed version of the dwarf song from the trailer. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, really? Has that been remixed?
Yeah. This guy, his YouTube account is called Caleb Nation, K-A-L-E-B Nation. And he did a nice little sort of techno house music remix of that song.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness.
It's pretty popular.
Well, we'll definitely line that up for next week. And in the mm-hmm. meantime, if our listeners have anything to add to our show notes, and if you've heard about something that we might have missed, please let us know. Send us an email, tolkien@sqpn.com, or let us know via our Twitter account. We have a Twitter account, what was it again? Hobbit Podcast, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Hobbit Podcast. And you can also find us on Facebook. Just look for Secrets of the Hobbit. And let's see, what else could we mention? Dave is also the program director or the channel director of Middle Earth Network Radio, of course. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have already checked that out. And of course, on Middle Earth, on the website of Middle Earth Network, you'll find a lot more news about not just The Hobbit, but the world of Tolkien in general. You've got the excellent productions by the Tolkien Professor, and of course, news about this upcoming trip to New Zealand.
That's right.
So a lot of fans are heading to New Zealand, or hoping to head for New Zealand to be there for the premiere of the movie, but also to just explore the two islands. And I've got some secret hope that I might be part of that. I don't know if I'll be able to free up my schedule, but it sounds extremely enticing. And
did you go sign up and register your interest?
Yeah, I'll probably do that, even if I can't go. But
you should go do that, because the longer the list of people they have signed up, the better deal we will probably get.
That's I assume that's normal, but it's just one of these once in a lifetime experiences, and so I'm still debating on whether I should make that one of my lifetime experiences, but I'm very tempted. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was it for today. Check out sqpn.com for more shows like this. We've got Secrets of Middle Earth. I'm sure if you like Secrets of the Hobbit, you'll definitely enjoy that. We walk around in the online games, Middle Earth. Lord of the Rings Online. That's the name. And we explore the background and the history of Middle Earth. We also have a show about The Hobbit that is very popular. We do shows about Once Upon a Time, excellent ABC television show that does very well, has a lot of, you know, fairy tales and just great, great, great TV series. We do a show about that as well. And I have my weekly show called The Break. Check it out on sqpn.com, and I'll see you next week here on The Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.